This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Of the commons from the ravages of the power centers of the day.
That's Noam Chomsky, Magna Carta, Then and Now, on the next Alternative Radio. Tune into Alternative Radio this Tuesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7 Community Radio. We just got done listening to Labor Radio. This KBOO program had been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information at ubc156.org. So please stay tuned next for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Karen James. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Tonight, my guest is Trish Jordan, Executive Director of Red Lodge Transition Services. Welcome, Trish. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Trish Jordan. My mother is Creek. My father is Miccosukee. And I live in Portland, Oregon.
Trish, what is Red Lodge Transition Services?
Red Lodge Transition Services is a minority-led Native American nonprofit organization, which was founded in 2006 and received their 501c3 in 2007. We are working toward assisting Native Americans, primarily women, in their reentry.
Trish, is this specific to Native American women? Do you include Native American men?
About 15% of our client population are men. We're fairly selective with the individuals that we choose to take on from the men's prisons, just because we're a grassroots organization and our funding is very limited. So the resources are scarce. But really, why we started with the women is we see women as having less opportunities available to them when they're released. It's a 1-to-14 ratio for the women to the men. Therefore, there's more housing available for men. There's more job opportunities coming out of prison available for men. And many of the women that we work with have children. So it's really important that we work with our women and try and help reduce and prevent incarceration of these generations that are coming up fast.
How many Native Americans are in Oregon prisons?
Well, if you look at the Department of Corrections racial profiles, you will find a number that's over 300. We did our own surveys in four of the prisons because we recognize that some people are not being identified as Native American upon intake. And what we came up with was almost 700 Native Americans in 14 of the state prisons.
Now, the Department of Corrections currently lists American Indians in Oregon prisons at 359. And you're saying that this is almost doubled?
Yes.
And why is that, Trish?
Well, that's a question that I've asked several times to the Department of Corrections, and it's a difficult situation. But what we're finding is that people who are, some of them even full-blooded, are being counted as Caucasian. Now, the prison will tell you that it's self-identifying, yet when we've talked with folks, they said, nobody asked me. So I'm not really sure why it happens, but it does happen. We're a very small community. We know who is Native and we know who we are. So it was fairly easy to do our own count.
And you do work in the prisons, don't you?
I do. I am what they call carded for 5 institutions. There are 14 prisons altogether.
So you can go in and do a head count, can't you?
Essentially, that's what we do. And, you know, we do miss some folks because they're in the segregation unit. And there are some Native people that don't participate in Native American services. But we all know who they are. And so we did the best we could to try and include them in that number.
So besides not being counted as a Native American, what other issues are specific to Native or Indigenous peoples who find themselves incarcerated and then coming back into the community?
You know, reentry begins with incarceration. And so if you really want to help change the situation in regard to reentry, you need to start working with folks while they're incarcerated. And that's what we do. We've developed programs, and we started with Native American Religious Services. The majority of our programs are run through Native American Religious Services. And even if they're not religious based or spiritually based, we're capable of bringing these programs in. The spirituality is huge because people need a foundation upon which to rebuild their lives. And regardless of the religious affiliation that you choose that seems to work for you, I feel very strongly that most people do have to start with that spiritual fulfillment.
So, Trish, you work within the prisons. You go into the prisons. Which prison? And what are the programs and services you bring?
I primarily work with the women at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. Red Lodge helps support the men's prisons with their annual cultural events and with the Native American Religious Service volunteers. At Coffee Creek, we have several programs. We have the Sweat Lodge once a month for the women. We have smudges. We have talking circles. We have special classes such as the Native American Shawl Project, where we taught the women how to make shawls. We just finished our spring celebration where the Simnasho Longhouse people come from Warm Springs and they do the first foods blessing ceremony for us. We actually gather the sacred foods that are required for this ceremony. I actually took several of our women that had been previously incarcerated to Warm Springs, and we dug the roots. And then we took the roots into the prison, and the women were able to peel the roots. And the first foods is a blessing, thanking the Creator for everything that we have. These cultural pieces are essential in people creating new mindsets in order to rebuild their life. And the culture will heal us if we allow it to.
And what is that like, going into the prison? What does it mean to the women inside?
Oh, it's life-saving. And we hear that all the time. They're so grateful for someone to come in and bring these teachings to them. What it does is it feeds our spirit and it provides hope. For a lot of the women that we work with, they've never been involved in Native American religious services. It's the first time they've ever been to a sweat lodge. It's the first time they've ever experienced a worship service. It's the first time that they have ever sat in the talking circle and really expressed themselves. The sweat lodge is one of the most powerful tools we have. Going through a sweat lodge ceremony is equivalent to dialysis. That's how much heavy metals and toxins are removed from our body through our skin. The skin is the largest organ in our body. And so people come out of the lodge and they feel really light and they feel clean and they feel renewed. Well, that's how we're supposed to feel. And so it is a very powerful tool. So what happens is it's like this light bulb that goes off. And all of a sudden they're like, yes, this is what I need. This is what I need to help rebuild my life. This is what I need to get right and to live right. And it creates, you know, this hope and motivation for people that, you know, maybe their life can be different and that they can break away from the poverty and the violence and the dysfunction that they grew up in.
So you're finding that women are actually reconnecting with the Native spirituality, religion, tradition in prison.
Many of them have never had that, or if they did, it was when they were still very small and they drifted away from it. The teachings that are there in those, we call them spiritual guidance teachings, they're very powerful and they teach us how to live right. And, you know, everybody has to find what works for them. And this is what usually works for Native people. They feel most comfortable with identifying with their own culture, and everybody needs to know who they are. And I think that that's one of the things that a lot of people in prison are missing is, you know, that identity. I think that that's why a lot of our youth tend to gravitate toward gangs, because they're looking for some way to be identified. And if we can bring people back to that culture, then they have that identity, and it strengthens them in every way. There's plenty of evidence-based research out there to prove that cultural training, cultural programming is best practice.
And Trish, I understand you're a registered nurse. How did you come to work with women in prison?
Well, that's a very interesting story. And yes, I am a registered nurse. I've been a registered nurse since 1984. I love nursing. I'm also a pipe carrier. I'm also a sun dancer. I got a letter from one of the chaplains at EOCI, which is in Pendleton. They had women there, and at the time I was living in Lewiston, Idaho. That's 3 hours from Pendleton. I got a letter from the chaplain who said, somebody gave me your name. Would you be willing to come and run sweat lodge ceremony for our women here once a month? And at first I thought, wow, Pendleton? They don't have anybody in Pendleton to do this? Okay. So I had to think about it. I had to pray about it. I had to talk to my elders about it. And like I said, I am a pipe carrier, that I have responsibilities toward my community and the people. Because of that, I am a sun dancer, that creates more responsibility. So when somebody asks me to do something like this, really, I am obligated. And so I thought, you know, I can give up one day a month. I can give up one day a month for these women to do this, because there was a time in my life when I could have gone down a different path and I could be sitting right there with them. But because I had people in my life who loved me, who cared for me, who gave me unconditional love and guidance, and I've had some terrific opportunities in my life. I did grow up in poverty. I did grow up in an alcoholic home. I know a lot of what these women are going through. I decided I can give up one day a month, and it kind of took over from there. But it's been a wonderful journey, and it broke my heart to develop relationships with these women and listen to them express themselves in the lodge where they felt safe and talk about their hurt and their pain. And then for them to say, you know, I'm getting out soon and I don't know where I'm going to go and I don't know who's going to, you know, I don't know how where I'm going to live. I have no skills. And then I started seeing the revolving door, and that really, really broke my heart to know that people were not even given the support that they need to make a successful transition back into society.
So let's talk about the transition services that Red Lodge provides for the women who are releasing from prison.
Well, everybody is an individual and everybody needs different assistance. And so what I try and do is I do an intake prior to people releasing, just so we have a good understanding of what kind of support system they already have and what they've got going for them. And then they do sign a contract with Red Lodge. Basically, that contract says that they're going to do their best and that they're going to be honest and they're, you know, they're willing to put in the work. And they also have to do some community service. That's part of the program that we're giving back to our community. When people get out of prison, there's several times that I've picked somebody up at the gate because they didn't even have a ride. They didn't have clothes. They didn't have money. Those are the most vulnerable. If you don't have a ride, if you don't have clothes, if you don't have money, you are given a gray sweatsuit and a bus pass, and all of your things are put in clear plastic bags and you're released. When those individuals hit the bus depot to catch their bus to wherever else it is that they're going, they are identified by everyone as just getting out of prison, not having anybody to pick them up, and having no means of supporting themselves. With women, that is a very vulnerable position to be in, and we don't want anybody releasing from prison like that. So we have a clothing closet. We take them over to the clothing closet. We provide emergency transportation. We introduce ourselves to their parole officers and let them know what we're planning to do to work with them. And all of the POs that we've encountered so far are very receptive to what we do. We provide a lot of mentoring when someone first gets out, especially if they've been down for a long time. The mentors will contact them at least once a day, see them at least once a week, and start working on that plan. We have short-term goals that need to be fulfilled when somebody first gets out, and then we start to graduate toward those longer goals. And the longer goals are, of course, permanent housing, education.
Trish Jordan from Red Lodge Transition Services, you say women releasing often have children. Are they finding housing upon reentering back to their communities, and are you able to help them in that area?
At least 60% of the women that we work with do not have safe housing to return to. Most people that are coming out of prison, they're either going to live with friends or relatives, or they're going into community housing, which is temporary. To try and find housing requires a great deal of work, and it requires you to tell your story. Because people have felony convictions, because they don't have any credit rating, it's really, really difficult to convince a landlord that they should rent to you. And housing is the cornerstone to reentry. Without permanent housing, people cannot get beyond survivor mode. So it's really important that people are given an opportunity to get into housing that is affordable and safe and available. We have raised almost $27,000 toward purchasing a house for our Native women. And I think we're going to talk about the Native American Prison Art Project here in just a little bit. But we're at a point right now, we're kind of right there at the crossroads of going from grassroots to a larger organization that is capable of really bringing in some mainstream funding to where we can actually run a program with housing for our women.
And Trish, you mentioned the Native American Prison Art Project, and this is artwork that is donated by artists in prison?
That's yes. Correct? In 2007, we put a call out to our Native American women and men, asking them to donate a piece of artwork to Red Lodge Transition Services so that we could have an art show. The reason behind having an art show was creating a non-threatening venue of which we could talk with the community on the barriers to reentry and incarceration of Native American people. So we created the non-threatening venue with the art. And I wrote three grants for the initial show, which was in 2007 in Eugene. And we matted and framed almost all of the art was professionally presented. And we actually created categories. There were 10 prisons that participated in the first show. We have 11 prisons that donate art to us on a fairly regular basis. Since 2007, we've received almost 300 pieces of donated art that have come from the prisons. And we do have some really incredibly talented people that are incarcerated for a very long time. They know that every time they donate to Red Lodge, that's them saying, we want to help support our women. We want to help support this program. The proceeds from the artwork that is sometimes sold or reproduced, all of that money goes into the Women's Transition House Fund. And like I said, we've raised almost $27,000 since 2007 at a grassroots level for this house. $20,000 actually has been raised just through the artwork alone.
And this is an ongoing art show, is that correct?
It is. The Native American Prison Art Project is actually a traveling show. And every time we take the show somewhere, we actually do a program where we invite the public and we talk about incarceration and we talk about reentry and the barriers that people face. And the reason that the artwork was donated, it's an incredible show of compassion and love for the women that we're working with.
Is the artwork on your website?
We have a separate website for the art called Friends of Red Lodge, and that is www.friendsofredlodge.org. We do own the copyright to the art. The artist has to sign a copyright so that we have permission to reproduce the piece. We make cards, prints, calendars.
And if someone inside wants to contribute, where would they send their artwork to?
Well, they need to send the artwork directly to Red Lodge Transition Services, P.O. Box 55157, Portland, Oregon 97238. We are in the process of creating the 2014 calendar. The artwork for that is closed, but we always have the next year to consider. But it's a really incredible piece of artwork. There's a lot of Native American history that's captured in the calendar itself. We have special dates that are specific to the Native American community and history that are identified in the calendar. It's a very beautiful calendar.
And Trish, is Red Lodge involved with any preventative programs to keep the youth out of prisons and jails?
Absolutely. We wouldn't be doing our job if we weren't working on prevention. One of the programs that we have been working on is a partnership with the Lakota Club from Oregon State Penitentiary. They have a youth speaking panel that they have been doing for, I think, about 14 years now. We recently got involved with them about a year and a half ago. where we take youth that are, you know, really kind of on the edge of making some wrong decisions, and we take them into the prison, and the majority of the men that are involved in the youth speaking panel are what we consider lifers. They're doing life in prison. And they talk about the spirituality and how that changed their life and how they were able to let go of a lot of their pain and just the ugliness that comes from, you know, living on the street and doing drugs and doing the things that, you know, we're not supposed to be doing. They share their life story with these youth, and they talk with them about prison isn't a good place to be. It's not a scared straight program. It's a reality program. And they talk a lot about how in 5 minutes your whole life can change. And they talk about how their life changed in 5 minutes and how they wish they could take that back, but they can't. And where to go for help if you need somebody to talk to. So it's been a really fabulous program, and we just recently picked up a new community partner. The Siletz Youth Prevention Program is being included in the youth speaking panels that happen every 3 months, and I'm in the process right now of looking for funding to help fund a youth program, which we would have one day a month that we would just get together from different areas with our high-risk youth and work with them. And it's all about not only helping our women who are mothers, helping our men who are fathers. We have the Native American Positive Indian Parenting Program. It has been funded. And so in July, we will start that program in 3 of the Oregon prisons.
And how do Native American parenting programs differ from traditional parenting programs?
The prison programs, they're made to carry around a little stuffed bear or animal that's supposed to be their baby, and you get in trouble if you leave it somewhere. So we just kind of get down to, you know, the real meat and potatoes of what it is to be a parent and how to interact with children and what it is that calms children and how to create a better communication and bond with our children. We have the teaching. The teachings have always been there. We talk about the baby boards. Both of my children were raised with their baby boards and why they're important. Children that are, you know, babies that are put in baby boards don't get SIDS. Our children, they feel held, they feel nurtured. There are just a lot of pieces that were missed because our great-grandparents and our grandparents were sent off to boarding school, and so they didn't know how to be parents. And so it's just kind of filling in the blanks for people. They identify with the cultural aspect of the program, and majority of the individuals that have gone through the program have felt very successful and empowered in having that knowledge of some of the traditional values that we hold as Native people.
And the Native American women who are reentering, how are they doing? What is the recidivism rate?
Well, the state of Oregon claims 27% as their number, and Red Lodge has been keeping statistic information since 2008, and we are doing better than the state of Oregon, but our numbers are very small compared to the state of Oregon. We do show a high success rate of about 87% for the people that we're working with.
So, Trish, give your contact information if someone wants to connect with you.
Well, the Red Lodge website is www.redlodgetransition.org, and that will give people a lot of information on the program and just exactly what it is that we do. They can reach us at redlodge@clear.net. That is the email address for Red Lodge. They can call us on the phone, 503-245-4175.
So, Trish, thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add?
I could talk a long time on any one of these subjects that we've touched on today, and I really appreciate you having me over to KABU, and thank you so much.
Thank you again to Trish Jordan, Executive Director of Red Lodge Transition Services, and you have been listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
And it is 7 o'clock, pretty much on the dot. It is Monday, June 10th, 2013. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for tonight's broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, followed by A Different Nature at 8 p.m.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland appearance of David K. Johnston, author of the book, The Rise of Monopolists, Why the Few Get Rich While Your Paycheck Shrinks. The book explains how the already very rich have for three decades quietly earned huge profits with help from politicians. David K. Johnston will be speaking at the First Unitarian Church on Friday, June 14th at 7 p.m., about the devastating economic stories unfolding in the public record that major media do not cover. More information about this KABU-sponsored event may be found at kabu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to creative collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland featuring